Welcome to the Journey to Midwifery podcast. This podcast platform is for midwives to tell their story. This is where you get to hear the how and the why a person is called on this journey to midwifery. I'm your host, Amber Wilson, a midwife myself, and I came up with this idea so that all those people asking these questions had a place to go to find answers. I hope you enjoy these stories as much as I enjoy recording them. Okay, here we are for another episode of Journey to Midwifery. And I have a wonderful, beautiful guest that you can't see. And she's going to introduce herself because her name is beautiful and I don't want to mess it up.
Hi, everybody. My name is Mari Carmen Farmer. I'm a midwife in Philadelphia.
So I'm glad you could meet me today and we could tell your story. I haven't heard it, so I'm excited. So as I'm sure maybe you've heard the other podcast, go all the way back and tell me why you became a midwife. What made you interested in midwifery?
We're going pretty far back now.
Okay.
I'll be 50 this year. Was a sociology major, sociology anthro undergrad. And I was really interested in women's health from a kind of social justice perspective. And I studied sort of access to health and immigrant health. And during my undergraduate years, I had a very unexpected pregnancy. And I was suddenly like thrust into some pretty hard circumstances with not a ton of support and found myself kind of in the system that I had been studying. And somebody, as I was like sort of looking for resources and figuring out what to do next, somebody suggested that I go see a midwife. And when I was a little girl, I really wanted to be a nurse. But in the 70s, nursing was a pretty undervalued profession. And I was pretty quickly talked out of that by my teachers and my parents who said, you know, you don't want to do that. You want to be a doctor. So I had kind of buried that dream and thought I wanted to be a veterinarian. And when this happened to me, it just kind of changed the direction of my life. So I went to see a midwife, and my boyfriend at the time, who's now my husband, this year we'll be celebrating our 25th wedding anniversary, which is crazy.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I felt like being at the midwife appointments, the office with the midwives, was the only place we were like really seen. There were so many like judgments around us and assumptions about us. And, you know, people assumed they knew our story and sort of what was going to happen to us. And at the midwife, when we would go see the midwife, it was like such a supportive, safe place. And they really included him in the conversations. And in so many places, he was pretty invisible to the people we would be interacting with. So I ended up with an induction for prom at 39 and 5 and had a very long induction, 2 days. I mean, it's not that long, but it felt long at the time. Mm-hmm. And ended up with like a 4.5-5 hour second stage, at which point the doctor on call really was recommending a C-section, and I was just dead set against a C-section, did not want a C-section. And my midwife, who's turned out to be like a very dear mentor in the end, she was amazing that day. And she said to me, you are gonna have this baby vaginally, don't look at them. They had brought the stretcher in, and the attending was kind of standing behind her with her arms crossed, shaking her head no. And she said, look at me, we're gonna have this baby, just you need to push. And I did, and I had a baby. And there was no like instrumental delivery, nothing. He came eventually with a very big head. And I remember thinking in that moment, like when she was just, you know, kind of just captured me the way that she did and believed in me, that this is what I wanted to do. Like, I was like, I can do this. Like, this is what I've been waiting to discover. And that was it. I knew like this was, and for me, midwifery kind of became the intersection of social justice and medicine, like those two things. So the stuff I'd been doing before with like the other interest in my life, which was healthcare. So, but that was easier said than done. You know, I had a little baby. I was like in some pretty hard circumstances, and I ended up, you know, we ended up building our family, and I graduated and started doing social justice work. So that's what I did. I worked as an AmeriCorps volunteer and eventually became the training director for that program, and learned to facilitate and lead people and do community building and facilitation of all kinds. And then went on to do what we used to call back in the day diversity work, which is like anti-racism work now. I think we mostly call it that now, which was amazing. And I really got to like hone those skills of leading people through hard conversations and tying it into the work they do in the world. And we had two other children. The births went much easier, you'll be happy to know. My third was born in an unplanned, precipitous home birth. She just kind of slipped out, and my partner caught her, so that was very exciting. But as it turned out, that baby, the third baby, was born at the time, we didn't know, but with an undiagnosed genetic anomaly. And she turned out to be actually very, very sick. My life sort of got, our lives got turned upside down. And she spent about 70% of her life probably in the hospital, a lot of that in the ICU. And 3.5 years later, she died in the summer of 2004. And that experience really, as you can imagine, changed my life. Not only her death, but also her illness, you know, being kind of on the front lines of healthcare as the parent of a sick baby and having nurses in every corner of our lives, at home, on case managing, at the hospitals, at the bedside, at the hospitals, outpatient, coordinating our care. And I just, you know, the respect in me for nursing just grew hugely, and like the ways that they changed our life. And so as I was exploring options for what track I wanted to take, that really started to influence me heavily, because I wanted to be a nurse too. Like I'm not necessarily a midwife who thinks you have to be a nurse to be a midwife, but I really was interested in being a nurse, just separately from even midwifery. But as I had my third kid, I also ended up, that's a whole nother story how I ended up finding out what a doula was, but I did find out what a doula was when she was a newborn, before she was really sick, before we kind of were in the thick of it. I went to get a part for my breast pump, and I looked up like on the Medela website, a retailer, and the retailer turned out that I asked the woman in the office, what is it that you do here? Because it wasn't a store. And she said, I train and, you know, like hire doulas. And I was like, what's a doula? And she told me, and I was like, that's my next step. So at 6 weeks of age, my daughter came with me and we got trained, or I got trained as a doula. And so I was a doula for the next 10 years. At first I did it just like as part of this agency. And then after my daughter died, I ended up going out on my own and having my own practice. I also became part of this nonprofit who did teen education for parents, teen pregnancy education and support for parents. And I was a mobile case manager. So I would go around to our teen moms who were in particular crisis, usually around like intimate partner violence, or they were part of the foster care system, or they had substance use issues, or a number of things. And I would get them resources and offer them social support and attend their births. And that was an amazing job for a few reasons. One is it really allowed me to sort of gain all these skills, but also I was still like very much in the grieving process, and it was really nice to be kind of in this solitary job where I got to give. And it was very like a very healing thing to do. So then I got certified through that same organization to teach childbirth education, and we got a March of Dimes grant to do Spanish language childbirth education in one of the communities around Philly. And so I started doing that, and eventually added that to my own like private practice, teaching childbirth ed. And so that's what I did for the next 4 years after she died. And then I finally, like, we sort of as a family decided that I was ready to go to nursing school. So I did a second degree program locally. I specifically chose my program because of how little it cost, and because in the second degree programs, it's often unusual to have like day classes and clinicals because a lot of people are working, but I had kids in school. So I wanted to go to school when they went to school. And so that's basically how I chose my program. And that was good. It was really, really hard. I had two jobs. I worked as a tech at night, like a tech in a children's hospital on the floor. And I was still working as a doula and childbirth educator. And I went to nursing school. So it was hard. And I was a mom, you know, of like school age kids. I didn't love nursing school, but I loved clinicals. That was really fun. And as a doula, I primarily went to maybe 70% of my births were at this one particular hospital where I had gained, just had a lot of relationships there. And that's where I had also given birth to all my kids. Well, two of the three. And it's where those midwives were that cared for me, the same midwives the whole time. That was where I applied to be a nurse. That's where I wanted to go. And I was really lucky. They only hired two new grads that year, and I was one of them. My very first day as a nurse, one of my doula clients went into very preterm labor with her twins, literally like 1 a.m. on my first day of work. And she gave birth to those twins. And that night, and I was there for that birth, and I got to walk her through that very fast labor and the months that followed, in which she lost one of her sons and one of her sons survived. And that baby is 9 now. And I'm still in touch with them. And, you know, it was a very seminal experience for me. They gave birth, and then at 8 o'clock, I went to hospital orientation and my career was off to the races. I worked as a nurse there. I forgot to mention that in the summer between my 2 years of nursing school, I was really lucky to land an externship on the special delivery unit at CHOP, which is, CHOP is our children's hospital here in Philly. And at CHOP, they had the world's first fetal surgery unit. And it started as a center for cardiac anomalies for babies, and then it eventually grew into a place where women with prenatally diagnosed fetal anomalies could come and give birth. Very like specialized unit, only 8 beds, but like some of the world's most renowned fetal surgeons work there. And I was very lucky because of my relationship with the midwives in Philly, because basically I was like a groupie that would show up at all the midwife events, literally all the time. They really advocated for me, and I was able to do a summer externship there, which was unbelievable. Like just, I saw things that I had never seen before. The other amazing thing about that unit is that the other way that you can give birth there is, if your baby has a diagnosis that's incompatible with life, you can go there for like to have a compassionate end of life experience for your birth and for the baby's life, whatever that duration is. And so it really kind of gave me a place where I could kind of put the expertise I had as a grieving mom to help other people. And so that was pretty formative for me to learn how to do that while not like infusing my own business, but yet still I had these skills that are sort of invisible, you know, and so I was able to use them. So I really wanted to go back and work there, but you have to be an experienced nurse to work there. That's like just the requirement of working there because it's so hard. So I worked at the primary hospital for 2 years, and then 2 years in, I took a per diem job at CHOP. And that's how I spent my nursing career at those two institutions. And all along kind of waiting for when I would feel ready to go to midwifery school. That was my intention the whole time, but I was learning so much and really enjoying my work and really like enjoying the care, the bedside, you know, my experience as a bedside nurse. And it was about 5 years in when I was like, okay, I'm ready. I'm ready for the next thing. And I went to midwifery school, and I live in Philly. There's two programs here. One is a distance learning program and one is a, you know, traditional program. And I did think long and hard where I wanted to go. And I ultimately, as I said, I'm a little bit on the older side and really am not used to online education and don't like it and really like kind of the relational advantage you have or the interaction that you have with professors in person. And so just decided that I needed that for my education, even though it was going to cost me more money. And the other thing I really liked is that I went to Penn, and there you have the ability to graduate as a NP and a CNM and sit for both boards. And so I really also liked that. And so that's where I ended up going, was to Penn. And I graduated December of 2016.
WHNP, is that what you mean?
Yeah, WHMP.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's nice to be dual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's nice.
How was their program set up? In classroom?
In classroom, completely.
Okay. Like how often? Do you remember?
Yeah, I think 4 days a week, maybe mm-hmm. five. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was every day, I feel like. Maybe not the first semester, and it depends a little how you do it. There's kind of two ways to do it. One is to do your sort of core classes. That would be patho, farm, complementary alternative modalities, policy, and research. You could do those kind of outside of your cohort experience. Mm-hmm. And then just take the midwifery, you know, primary care, GYN, antepartum, intrapartum, integration, or you could do it all at once. I did a little bit of a hybrid. I did a few of the core classes before, and then I took some of those plus my midwifery courses at the same time. And obviously all those midwifery courses also carry clinicals with them. So depending on whether you did those classes before or not, kind of depended on how many days a week you went, okay. Especially in the first 6 or 6 months after, like once you start antepartum, it's like pretty much almost every day mm-hmm. that you're going to class or clinicals, one or the other.
Were you working also?
I was working. I worked the whole time.
And mom.
And a mom. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. I had, so one kid was in college and mm-hmm. one kid was in high school. My high school kid was in boarding school, mm-hmm. but locally. So I still, you know, would go there a lot, especially if she's a soccer player. So I would go to her games and her events, but it wasn't exactly the same as her, obviously, as them being both in the house. Mm-hmm. My husband was also getting his MBA. So it was, we were all very busy studying, which actually was great to be able to do that together. And I worked, let me think about this. I want to say that I worked full time for the first 6 months. Then I dropped to part-time and then for antepartum semester. And then I dropped to per diem for, I was in per diem the whole time with CHOP, but with my main job, I went per diem the last 6 months. So for intrapartum and integration, I was per diem. It was hard. And my integration semester, I was at a birth center. So I was on call, you know, almost all the time. Mm-hmm. But somehow I had a very like, you know, supportive preceptor and very supportive workplaces also. And I also didn't sleep much. I don't recommend it, but I didn't. I slept a lot in my car. One of my per diem jobs was about 500 feet from the door of the nursing school. So I could kind of like sneak in a shift and then go back. That kind of thing. So I did that a lot.
Yeah. Mm. Is the birth center right there in Philly?
It is. It's just outside of Philly. Yeah. In the suburbs. Yeah. So that was my closest clinical placement. All my clinical placements were 1.5 hours to 2 hours from home, except for the last one, which was
why so far.
Well, it's a big program. There's two midwifery schools, and there's a lot of people to place. We had 21 people in our class. It was a big class.
Wow.
So yeah, I had to do it. So yeah. and also the kind of care that I wanted to be prepared. Like, I knew the population I wanted to work with and what I wanted to do. And so I think Penn did a really good job of matching me. But it meant that I often didn't get the local ones because the competition was fierce. But I fought for that birth center placement. I really wanted it, and I was really lucky to get it.
Were they busy? How busy?
Oh yeah, they're busy. They're actually one of the biggest birth centers in the country. They're the oldest accredited birth center in the whole country. They do, at the time they were probably doing about 40 births a month. Now they do like 55.
Gosh. Yes. Yeah, how busy. Many rooms do they have there?
It's big. They have 3 plus the living room, which can be converted into a birth room.
And they still do 40?
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah, they work really, really hard. And they have a hospital that they have privileges at that are across the street that they transfer to. And they actually now, at the time they weren't doing this, but they can now offer hospital inductions for people that sort of risk out of mm-hmm. being at the birth center, but don't risk out of midwifery care.
Yeah.
So they're busy. So that was the other kind of nice thing, is that because I was a bedside nurse in a hospital, I had some comfort level in the hospital. And so that was kind of an interesting aspect, like the mm-hmm. transfer thing and mm-hmm. managing patients in the hospital. So yeah, it was a great experience.
So I'm going to ask about your career, but yes. Everybody likes to know how school gets paid for. So how did you do it?
Oh yeah, happy to talk about it. So a couple of things. I applied for a lot of scholarships. I got some. I personally really wanted to work. I know I alluded to this earlier, but I knew that I wanted to work with immigrant populations, people who are underinsured or not insured in Philly. I had no plans to leave Philly. And so I was able to get a couple scholarships that were like, I didn't do HRSA or anything, but there were some local fellowships that required that after graduation, like a year or two, not a specific place, but just that you could demonstrate that you were going to care for that. And then they followed me for the first couple of years to make sure that I did that. So I got some of that. There's a Blue Cross has a foundation also that encourages that. So I got a little bit of money. I mean, I'm talking like maybe $1,000 a semester, but still. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you look at the price tag at Penn, you'll see it's a lot more than that. But and then the rest was student loans. I mean, I had quite a bit of student loans. I was lucky in that I was able to work for the majority of my nursing school, and like, meaning I paid a lot of my nursing school. So I didn't have, I didn't get scholarships or anything, but I didn't have a huge student loan debt from nursing school. And that's one of the reasons I went to a nursing school. It didn't cost a lot because I knew that I would probably go to Penn and pay yeah. through the nose. So yes, I have a lot of student loans.
Well, that was good for that far ahead to think.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, I talked to a lot of nursing students and they just said, like, you can go to a big name nursing school. It's not going to matter in the end. Like, it just doesn't matter. And so I took that to heart and I just went for it. Yeah. I took like my prereqs at the community college and they were great. Actually, I really loved those classes. So that was smart.
Yeah.
But a lot of student loans and some scholarship money and some cat, you know, some me paying, you know, from yeah. the money I was making. So
yeah, all that scholarship helps every little bit. Really.
Every little bit helps.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every little bit helps.
And that's good information. I didn't know about those two. Yeah.
It was good. You just have to be super diligent, and that takes time and that's hard to do, but it's worth it. And at least you feel like you're making some kind of dent. I also got a discount for working at University of Pennsylvania because I was a nurse there. So the way that it worked is that for every 3 classes, Penn would pay for the 4th class. And so that also was pretty great. Mm-hmm. And so that helped take down some of the tuition too, which also meant I had to keep working. At least part-time, which is why I put my per diem off as long as possible, because once you start working per diem, that deal goes away. Mm-hmm. So that's another way that I paid for it.
Yeah. All helpful.
Yep. So what did I do after graduation? Well, At first, I really thought that I would work at the institution where I was working as a nurse. It's kind of, you know, the midwives that took care of me. I always sort of envisioned that I would be a midwife there. But a few things happened. One is I really started to question the wisdom of starting as a new midwife in the same place I was a nurse, because I thought that role transition could be hard. And I was cautioned about that from a lot of people. And the other thing is that that practice really wasn't excited about hiring a new grad. And lucky for me, they were pretty honest about that. So I sort of like just let that go. And when I looked around, it actually was pretty obvious where I wanted to be, which was a place called Hahnemann University Hospital, which no longer exists in Philly. But it was essentially the safety net hospital for the city. And the thing that made it really unique, well, two things. One is that the midwives there were the primary prenatal care providers for the city of Philadelphia. So they not only staffed like sort of private offices or commercially insured offices for folks with insurance, but also would go and provide prenatal care at clinics in different communities around Philly. And so those folks were largely Medicaid insured or uninsured. The other really unique thing about the midwifery practice at Hahnemann is that they had like a really collaborative practice with the physicians. So it was one practice made up of both OBs and midwives, and all of the providers, both the midwives and the OBs, were resident educators. And so it was this fully integrated system where every patient who came there got midwifery care as kind of the first line. And obviously if they've risked out of midwifery care, then the attending physician would be the one to manage care. But there was also a lot of gray. So there's a lot of co-management as well, depending on what was happening. And that's a pretty unique model. It's definitely present in other hospitals around the country, but not that many, and certainly not anywhere in Philly. And so that was very attractive to me.
You said it wasn't there anymore?
No, that's what? A whole story.
Well,
so
I want to hear about it.
I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
So I started there the summer of 2017. So I graduated December, maybe 14th of 2016, around there, like mid-December. And I interviewed a week later and I got my offer on February 1st, just to give people a timeline.
Yeah.
People wonder.
They
I
do.
Took my boards maybe the second week of January or third week of January. And I took my NP boards first and then my midwifery boards, only because I thought my NP boards would be harder for me. So I took the harder one first, what I perceived to be the harder one. I'm not sure which one was harder. They were both hard. I took one on a Monday, one on a Friday. I just did it like all in 1 week. And the primary way I studied is the book written by Jamil Noctuan Ramos. At the time was the red book, now is I think the teal book. She was one of my professors at Penn. I was really lucky to have her as a professor. Yeah. And literally I just did those questions over and over and over. And I also did the apps. Like there's a couple of apps. There's probably a whole lot more now. And I just did questions and questions and questions. And the ones that I got wrong, then I would like look up that information. But I didn't try to like relearn everything. I just kept sort of honing my test taking skills. And that worked. I passed both of them on the first try. So I got an offer on February 1st and my first day of work was June 12th. And that's when like all the paperwork finally, basically that was kind of the timeline of how long that took. It takes forever. I worked as a nurse until like a week and a half before I started my midwife job. I didn't have a huge break, but a little bit of a break. So that was good. My like little summer vacation before orientation started. So Hahnemann was you know, an amazing experience. I'm still with the same practice, which I'll tell later, but it was a hospital that had sort of a long history of being owned by different folks. It was in a collaboration with an academic medical program, but was actually owned by a for-profit group. And so it was kind of financially not in the best health. And I, in January of 19, it got bought by like a real estate mogul, like a venture capitalist guy, who basically we came to find out later that he bought it for the real estate value. And so he took the crippled hospital and instead of rescuing it, he finished it off, basically. And by July of 2019, we were closed. And it was very sudden, even though this financial health issue had been an issue for a while, we didn't really see the closure happening. Coming. And it happened very quickly and was very traumatic for everybody who worked there, but especially for our patients and for the city. It was a huge loss for our city. We had we were one of six OB hospitals. And at that point we had lost, I don't know, 14, 15 birthing hospitals over the last 15 years in Philly. So many maternity units have closed. So closing one more, especially the primary one where our population of patients went, was really devastating. And I mean, we could spend hours talking about it. It's a pretty emotional topic. But what basically happened is the closure was announced. About 10 days later, L&D was closed because as units started to close, you know, L&D kind of needs all the ancillary stuff to work, like the lab and the radiology and all that stuff. And it just became like unsafe because we never knew what the next thing was that wasn't going to be open. And so it closed, like I think our last birth was on a Friday, and on Saturday we were like in an emergency. We were emergency moved to a different hospital. Like, so the state got involved and basically helped another local hospital, Thomas Jefferson, emergency credential us and get us on the floor without any break so that our patients would have a place to go. And so we landed at Jefferson the next day, and we've been there ever since, actually. And so for about 3 months, we worked sort of under this emergency clause where we were still employees of Hahnemann, but working at Jefferson. And then in the meantime, our practice was kind of clarifying what our priorities were for like what we were going to do, whether we were going to stay together, all those things. And we decided we did want to stay together and we wanted to continue working in our capacity as providers with at the clinics. And we wanted to stay a practice. So we entered talks with a few local hospitals and in the end decided that Jefferson would be the best place to be. And we ended up staying there and got a new contract and started with them September 30th of 2019. And we've been there ever since. So that's where I work now. Same colleagues, which is awesome, with a few additions and a few people who went off and did something else, but for the most part, most of us are here, and our patients followed us, which is amazing, and we still work at the clinics. So some things are really different and some things are exactly the same.
So essentially just a new employer.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was the hospital able to safely absorb your population?
They were. I mean, at first it didn't feel super safe. Yeah. It was a huge increase in volume for them.
Yeah.
But we did, we have, since we came, we've instituted the same model we had at Hahnemann, so that midwives cover the floor 24/7. We're the same thing where midwives are kind of, every patient gets a midwife as long as they, a midwife and a resident, as long as they risk, you know, they don't risk out of care. And so having that other provider on the floor really helped them absorb the volume. And so, yeah, they were able, they had, you know, experienced some decrease in volume over the few years before that. So they were able to kind of accommodate for the difference. It was a big, big difference though for them. So
I'm going to ask you what you love about your job now, but why are there so many hospitals closing? I mean, Philly is humongous. Why are there?
I mean, it happened all over the country in the early 2000s because of changes in the way Medicaid was reimbursed and the lack, you know, kind of this de-investment in reproductive health care as like not being something that's profitable. And so a lot of it just comes down to money and the way that care of women is perceived. And so a lot of the smaller hospitals could no longer float their L&D units.
Yeah.
And it has become really like an academic venture because only the academic medical centers can kind of support that because of all the other things they do. And the residency program, I think, pays for a lot of it, the federal money that goes into training residents.
Yeah.
And that's a whole nother podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. So I knew rural hospitals were struggling that way with small mm-hmm. facilities, but I didn't realize mm-hmm. this larger Urban. Cities were doing mm-hmm. it too.
Yeah. That's a huge problem. So all the neighborhood hospitals, there's no way to get to have a baby in any of the outer lying areas. You have to go into Center City to have a baby in Philly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is
so weird. I can imagine the podcast that you could talk about the disparities and mm-hmm. things yeah. of that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a huge issue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So tell me what you love about what you do now that you've been a midwife for what, 4 or 5 years?
4 years. Yeah. Yeah.
Four. Mm-hmm. You're about to recertify.
Yeah. About 1 more year till I recertify.
Yes. Start on those modules.
I know. I started. You'd be okay, really good. Proud of me.
There's so
and
many.
I just paid AMCV.
Yeah. Oh, I did too. $70 last week. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
The thing that I love the most is, well, let me just say, I love obstetrics. Like I love the pregnancy stuff. I love and admire people who love GYN. I don't love GYN. I think it's super important. It's just not my thing. And I think that's because of my background as a doula. Like I really just from the beginning and the fact that like the midwifery bug bit me giving birth. And so that's like really what I love. I do love contraception, everything about it, explaining it, educating people about it, helping them make the choice. I love that. I just don't love like abnormal uterine bleeding, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. But I love labor support. I love the process of labor, watching a birthing person go from the beginning to the end and helping them find the tools to get them through and really discovering in the process that they had a lot more inside of them than they anticipated. I really love uncovering the stories of the people that I take care of. Like that's just, I love prenatal care and really kind of getting to know my patients, not just around their birth experience, but just their life, like understanding their lived experience, sort of getting to know my patients kind of in the entire context of their lives, not just as a pregnant person. So I love that. I also love like the birth. Like I love the moment of birth. I love working with somebody in the second stage. I can't get enough of it. It's like a good drug.
Mm-hmm. It really is.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. I do love that. And I know some people don't, but that I do.
Who?
So far.
Who?
I don't know. Some people are just like, eh. And I'm never like that. I
don't know those people.
Yeah. They're not my people.
No.
I love that. I love like bringing in the support people. Like, I don't mean bringing them into the room. I mean like engaging them and getting them to understand what's happening and getting them to kind of be invested in the process. And I love supporting people through hard stuff, like even grieving. Like I love finding a way to get them through those things. I feel like, you know, like midwives are Sherpas, like we help people, you know, we say the only way out is through and we get people through, you know? And so that's, I love that process. It makes me really happy.
Yeah.
So.
And I would tell you time and time again, every time I hear these stories and as well as yours, how much our own life has impacted why we do midwifery and the things you have, like you had mentioned before, like your, you know, your side skills or your, you know, stuff you didn't get through school. Just the
invisible
life
stuff.
Yes, invisible skills. That's what you said. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you're just, you've told a couple stories where I've thought you were the perfect person for that person, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So does your volume allow you like continuity or time to sit and labor sit?
So sometimes and sometimes no. Continuity, yes, because the clinics that we go to the same clinics every week. And so I know my patients really well. And I don't only take care of clinic patients in the hospital. I take care of every patient who sort of, quote, qualifies for midwifery care. So there are many patients I don't know ahead of time, but I feel really grateful. Like one of the skills, again, I don't think that you have to be a nurse to be a good midwife at all. But I think one of the skills that I honed while being a bedside nurse is the ability to like build a rapport with almost anyone. And so the fact that I don't know them when they come into labor is not too big of a deal because you can figure out how to overcome that, right? But I do have quite a bit of continuity in the hospital. It's really nice. I mean, it's really special when you have a patient that you know. It doesn't always happen, but it happens enough to make me happy. The answer to labor sitting is sometimes yes, sometimes no. And so it just depends. And it depends on like, you know, there are some people who need it more than others. And so sometimes we sort of triage labor support, you know, like if someone will support, then that might be the room that I choose to labor sit while somebody else gets support from their bedside nurse or from their support, their partner or whatever the case is. But certainly I do it enough that it makes me happy. And the other thing I love about my job is that I love to teach and I get to teach every single day. Residents and nurses and med students and PA students and all kinds of people. And I get such a thrill out of that and teaching them labor support. I'm actually right now doing a series of labor support workshops for our residents. And I don't care that much if I'm not the primary person doing it, as long as I'm able to like pass it on to somebody and model that. So I feel super lucky that I get to teach. I know it's not for everybody, but I really like it.
And they're pretty receptive to it.
Yeah, they are. Jefferson has never had midwives before we got here. Oh. So that was a huge culture change. I think was a big learning curve for everybody who worked here. And some people, like some of the attendings had worked with midwives before, but a lot of them had not. And most of the residents had not either. Some of our residents from Hahnemann came to Jefferson. So they were like raised by us. So that was helpful. But the nurses, many of them had never known what midwifery was. So it's been a real journey in like educating folks in what we do and watching kind of the light bulb come on, like, oh, this is what they can contribute to our team. This is the value that they have. And teaching has been a really big part of that, you know, just sort of teaching people. So yeah, I would say they've been receptive. They've been great, like really open to it. You know, it hasn't been perfect. It's been rocky for sure. And we had really no time to sort of process everything that we went through, but people have been receptive to it.
So what is your work life like? How often do you work?
Schedule like? So I work anywhere from 1 to 2 weekends, and that usually means 2 shifts for the weekend, right?
Like a 12 or a 24? 12.
Okay. I never work 24. Okay. Ever. So I never have in my in my life. So I work 12-hour calls that are protected, like the 12 hours before and the 12 hours after are protected. That's always been the case. And I'm lucky to have a regular call night. So that's Monday night. I work every Monday. If you want to remember that, you can.
I'm going to write it Monday down. I'm taking notes.
we call it Monday Monday.
I like here. That. Yeah.
Yeah. I like it too. And then I work 2 days in clinic, which are 8-hour days on paper, often not 8-hour days in real life, but 8-hour days on paper. And then I have 4 hours of admin a week, which usually I will do on Fridays. And I do a bunch of other kind of, we'll say, extracurricular midwifery stuff, which usually happens on Fridays as well. And then, like I said, 1 to 2 weekends a month. Sometimes that looks like split. So like 1-12 on one weekend, another 12 on another weekend, and then sort of a full weekend, which is 2-12. It just kind of depends. Sometimes it's a little more because of vacations or whatever, but usually that's what it is. It's a really great schedule. And actually it's the most work-life balance I've ever had. Yeah. Because I've always had like 2 jobs or 3 jobs.
And school.
Mm-hmm. And kids. My kids are now adults.
Yeah.
They don't need me anymore, really, except for a little emotional support here and there.
Yeah.
I still can't
believe you have adult children. You don't look like it.
I know.
People can't see you, but I will vouch for that.
They're going to have to take your word for it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Or they find you on Instagram. Yeah. So for new grads working in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. what might they expect mm-hmm. for salary?
So generally speaking, I would say around 100,000.
Okay.
For a new grad. Could be a little bit more, could be a little bit less. It depends if you work in a birth center or in an academic hospital setting, if you're full-time or not. But I would say for a full-time midwife, it's probably like, if I'm giving actually a fair range, with the including the birth center, I would say probably between 85 and 110, maybe on the high end, depending where you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
Which is about what I made with my 2 nursing jobs. Nurses get paid very well in Philadelphia. You can make mm-hmm. a lot of money, especially if you work night shift. Oh, I forgot to say that. I work night shift. Mm-hmm. I love night shift. It's pretty much my what I mostly do. I don't always get scheduled for night shift, but I try to make a switch.
It's a little more, sometimes a little more peaceful.
Yeah, I rotated for my first 3 years as a nurse, and then a float team position came open, and I really wanted to do that because I thought before I become a midwife, I should like see what postpartum care is really like and what NICU care is really like. So I got trained to become a NICU nurse, like a lower level NICU nurse, not like a trach vent NICU nurse, and a postpartum nurse. And I did that. That was a night position. And so from then on, I was straight nights. And then that in my first few years as a midwife, I did both day and night call, but eventually I mostly moved into night. So
Yeah.
And I like it that way. That's good.
So do you have any advice for new midwives or people that want to be midwives? Yes.
So my first piece of advice is just like, try to get to know midwives. Like as soon as you know that you want to be a midwife, try to build relationships in whatever midwifery community you can find. I mean, it took me, 22 years to become a midwife. And in that time, is that right? Yeah, that's right. I was literally like a groupie. Like I would just show up at like ACNM things, and not like annual meeting, but like local things, like things in the park. I don't know. Everybody knew who I was. They were like, oh, that's the one person who's not a midwife, but she's always here. And it really helped. I like got mentors that way, and really got to know like what the choices were before me in terms of the programs that were available, the sort of issues that the midwifery community was grappling with, what the choices, sort of what the landscape was in the city around midwifery. And the midwifery community was so generous with me. I mean, so, so generous. And now I am the president of the local ACNM chapter here in Philly, mm-hmm. Called the Philly Metro Midwives. And I helped to start that organization. And the reason I did is because there was no mechanism for me to do what I did. I just did it because I had a dream and I just wanted to follow it. And I didn't know how else to do that. But now we have so many students who come to our meetings and just get mentorship just by the, you know, the fact that we have an intentional community now. So that's so wonderful. So that's what I would say, is like seek community with other midwives. And I would say to anticipate that school is really hard. It's just really hard. Everything about it, it's so stressful. That don't judge your, like, how much you're going to love being a midwife based on your experience in school, because it is better when you graduate. And that's me speaking as an educator. Like, I love teaching, and I would hope that, you know, that a lot of the educational experience is valuable, but it's, I mean, I'm just not gonna, it's just brutal, you know, being in clinicals and being in classes and doing all the other things that people do in their lives, caring for parents or kids or pets or partners or whatever. It's a lot, but it's worth it.
Would you, looking back on your 22 years to get here, would you do anything different?
I would probably be more patient. I was pretty impatient, even though it took that long. I would, you know, every 2 years I was like, is it time yet? Is it? And I would get really frustrated, like, you know, when is this going to happen? And now looking back, I can see that everything that I did, like, contributed to my knowledge as a midwife and my skills, my ability to talk to people, my ability to really see the issues behind the kind of veneer that that patients present, and just gave me kind of a whole education that I could have never gotten in school. And so I think that I would have just been more patient with my younger self, like, just trusted that it was gonna happen, you know? Yeah, I think one of the things that I did really well, which I didn't realize I was doing at the time, is garner a lot of support for myself, so that when midwifery school came and it was so hard, that I had a lot of people telling me, you can do this, you know, everywhere from, like, my partner, who was so, so supportive and was so intentional in helping me figure out when the right time was, to my kids, who were so excited, you know, that this was finally happening. I mean, I just talked about it forever. And so many, I had so many mentors, like, I can't even tell you how lucky I was. So, so lucky. And so I would say that too, like, get your people around you, because you're going to need them to get you through. There will definitely be times when you're like, what am I doing? But now that I've done it, I tell people this all the time, that because I waited for so long, I had this fear in the last semester of midwifery school that I was going to be disappointed. Like, I've worked so hard, I waited so long, and that it was just going to be like, you know, like, I don't know, different than being a nurse, but not that different, but not even close. Mm-hmm. It's so good. It's like even better than I could have imagined.
Anything else you want to add that I didn't ask?
As you know, I have, like, a real interest in social justice and anti-racism work. And that was a big fear that I had when I let that go. I let that part of my, I didn't really let it go, but, like, that career kind of had to end in order for me to move into birth work, at least in a very direct sense. And I really, it was kind of my mission to find a way back to it in midwifery. And I have, and I just want to say that we need midwives who have all kinds of different backgrounds, and that it's really not to get discouraged if that happens, if you have a career switch, or you feel like you have this, again, like, invisible set of skills, that there's room in midwifery for all of that. We need people with, like, business, you know, background and legal background and educational background and all kinds of things. And I have found just a ton of support in doing the work that I'm doing. I just recently in the last year, intentionally, but really the last, like, maybe 3 years or 4 years since midwifery school, been working on starting an initiative that focuses on anti-racism and addressing trauma in midwives and building community in midwives. And it's called Midwife y Maestra. And it's not even out in the social media space yet. It's mostly in my head, but it's happening. Like, I'm already starting to take clients and that and whatnot. And I didn't know if that would ever be possible. And it's happened. And so I would say that to people too, like, you don't have to lose your other identities in order to become a midwife. You can figure out how to because like the world needs midwives in all kinds of spaces. And so it doesn't just have to be like the traditional definition of a midwife. There's lots of ways to be a midwife.
What is it? Is it a like a mentorship or a course?
It is like I would say that maybe the easiest way to describe it is like a consulting collaborative. So I do like, I lead retreats and healing circles and workshops and trainings and all kinds of experiences, I guess is the best way to say it. And what I do is I pull in other professionals, usually midwives, who have expertise in one area or the other to work with me on different projects. And so it's like an umbrella or a vessel to hold all these other skills I have so that I can do that work in the world, kind of, you know, out there. Those are things that really interest me, like building community. And I have a real interest in provider trauma, especially midwife trauma. I think we're really bad at processing our own trauma. And because of that, we can cause harm to people. And I think that we can just do a much better job. We can take care of each other the way we take care of other people. And so that's kind of just something that I'm really interested in doing. And anti-racism work. So I think that I have a little bit of a unique lens on that work just because I came to it not from healthcare perspective. And I've been really fortunate to work with a lot of different people who've just educated me in all kinds of ways. And I really try to create experiences for people that are not like, you know, like a module or something, you know, mm-hmm. just something very interactive and like something that goes deeper beyond the usual kind of trainings that we have to do as healthcare providers. So that's what it is. It's kind of a facilitation collaborative where I'm kind of the main person and then I partner with different people depending on what their expertise is to work with me on different projects. And it's been super fun. I just love doing it. It actually, the formal idea started because of my class. My class, we graduated in the year of the presidential campaign in 2016, which was, as you can imagine, a pretty difficult time to be in midwifery school, especially if you identify as a Black and Indigenous person of color. And when we went to ACNM, our former president was doing a campaign rally that turned really violent. And the midwives of color were sequestered in the basement of the hotel because of the Secret Service was worried that our lives were in danger. It was very dramatic and terrifying and a really interesting and difficult time to be kind of going through all of this transition professionally. And the other thing that happened in those years were a number of police brutality cases that ended in death. And so that was kind of this national racial unrest time. And so my class was really interested in having conversations about this. And frankly, midwifery schools were just not equipped to have those conversations. And so I just started doing it myself and kind of leading the class through some of that dialogue with the help of some local organizations and the support of my classmates, and one thing led to another, and I was like, okay, it's time for me to start doing this again. And that's what kind of reopened. I like planned some retreats for my class and did some other things. We did like a ritual the night before we graduated just for us. So that was really nice, kind of like a threshold crossing thing. Mm-hmm. So things like that I love doing, and I got to do all that stuff during midwifery school. And then when I finished, I was like, okay, I'm going to keep doing this. So yeah, it kind of was birthed during that time.
So how would one find out more information to do this with you?
Well, right now they would just email me. I'm working on creating a website and some other things like on Instagram. But for right now, they would email me at midwife emaestra, I can spell that, @gmail.com. So maestra is like teacher in Spanish, or okay. Queen bee, or maestro, like a conductor, like someone mm-hmm. who facilitates. So it's M-A-E-M-A-E S-T-R-A. Like okay. Maestro, but an A at the end instead yeah. of an O at the end.
You send it to me. I'll put it in the show notes. So mm-hmm. then if people want to contact you.
Great.
That's great. Mm-hmm. It's yeah. such great work you're doing.
Thank you.
Yeah, I love
it's
it.
It's really fun. I'm really lucky I get to do it. It keeps me very busy, but I really like it.
Your yeah, Instagram page awesome. with your beautiful sure. pictures and
sure,
poems?
Sure, sure, sure. I'm going to mess up the underlines. It's MC Mama Osa, which means Mama Bear, which is kind of a tag that I often get. Hold on, I'll tell you guys 1 second.
Okay.
It's MC underscore Mama, like M-A-M-A, underscore O-S-A, which means bear in Spanish.
I'll put that in the show notes too.
I do nature photography on the
side. Yeah, that's very beautiful. Yeah. I love the beautiful poems you put in there.
Mm-hmm. It's I been love nice. To write. Yeah, thank you.
I can tell. Yeah, you should. Yeah. I was thinking she should do a blog.
Yeah, I should in my spare time. You know?
Yes, all your spare time. That's what mm-hmm. I was going to say.
Yeah. So I do want to say one more thing, actually, yeah. now that you're saying that, that I think that one of the things that I'm really passionate about, the sort of the other side of working with midwives around trauma is working with midwives around wellness. And that is kind of like something that I talk about a lot. And I think that there's a relationship between wellness and anti-racism that's pretty strong, a connection there, and also trauma and racism, right? And so I am really passionate that all of us have to have our ways or have to be diligent in nurturing things in our life that create resilience, because midwifery is a really hard, it's hard work in many ways. It's like hard heart work and it's hard physical work. And so just to speak to like why I do photography and writing, and those are like some of the things that feed me, that feed my soul. And I think that that's really important for all of us to have. And when we don't have it, it comes out in our work in not so good ways. And in ways that I think, counter the healing work that we're trying to do. So I guess that would be my last plug, is like take care of yourselves and each other, as I think Jerry Springer used to say.
Is that what he said? I don't ironically. Remember.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he said that.
That's very insightful. Wellness is important for anti-racism. Mm,
that's really important, I think. I think that one of the things that I've been speaking about lately in my work is that the personal habits of anti-racism are the same habits that create mindfulness in us. So like personal awareness, humility, reflection. Just like gratitude. You know, all of those things are things that you need to, that are tools that can really advance someone's anti-racism skills. So being really aware, being able to take a step back and see your own, you know, gaps and deficits and not take it personally and just, you know, really want to grow. That's like the humility part. The ability to sit down and reflect on your own actions or on things that you witness, things that you see. I think all of those are very important components of anti-racism. If you have a life of mindfulness or a mindfulness practice, that you can use that. Like sometimes people don't see the connection, but there's a pretty strong connection. You can use that to kind of further the work that you're doing in your own anti-racism work. So food for thought.
That was great and wonderful. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Thanks. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. It was really nice to meet you.
Well, podcast family, I hope that you enjoyed another great episode. It was so wonderful hearing from Maddie about her journey to midwifery and her continued work in anti-racism. If you are interested in hearing more from her, you can look her up on Instagram and or email her. Both of those are linked in the show notes. She was also a listener suggested guest and was super kind enough to connect with me so that we can make this episode. So I thank her very much for her time for that. And remember, if you have any suggestions, you can email me at journeytomidwiferypodcast@gmail.com, or you can find me on Instagram or Facebook, the same place, Journey to Midwifery Podcast. So I hope you enjoyed it, and see you all next time.